do not listen to this show, the truth can be scary. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
I'd like to call to order this secret conclave of America's media empires. We're here to come up with the next phony baloney crisis to put Americans back where they belong, in dark rooms glued to their televisions too terrified to skip the commercials.
Well, I think...
NBC, you are here to listen and not speak. I think we should go with a good old-fashioned public health scare.
A new disease. No one's immune. It's like the summer of the shark, except instead of a shark, it's an epidemic. And instead of summer, it's all the time.
That is smoke.
Now, I hate to be the guy who derails what everybody else loves.
He loves being that guy.
But, Janice, we do have standards. This can't be a made-up disease. The only moral thing to do is release a deadly virus into the general public.
We do have something we've been holding on to, but it hasn't been tested. Get over here, NBC.
More true than we think. Isn't it funny how The Simpsons always sort of, forecast events? Remember President Trump coming down the escalator? Interesting. Way before it happened. All right. Welcome to the Kate Daly Show. Can't wait to get rock and rolling on the show today. And the phone lines are open. 888-673-1450. 888-673-1450. You can go to katedalyradio.com for podcasts and share those far and wide. There are some that are that say short on them. It means that it's a short broadcast, maybe 15, 20 minutes. So just so you know, for your listening pleasure, make sure that you are well aware of that and go and share them. I want to talk today. There's a couple of things at hand. In this hour, I want to hit bioterror in the United States. Not coming to the United States, but within the United States. So I want to talk about all the labs. I want to talk about some of the things that we need to be very aware of moving forward, as this is very much a threat to something happening at large. Then in the next hour, I'm excited to have Colonel Doug McGregor on the show. We'll be talking about the Middle East and getting his take as a colonel. This will be really a really great chat, and I really do hope that you listen in on that too, because as far as a conversation, an honest conversation about Syria, about Iran, what's going on, what decisions are being made, and we'll get Colonel Doug McGregor's take on that as well. So moving ahead on this, bioterror in the United States, when I say that, I'm sure some people will basically run to the conclusion that I have this tinfoil hat and that I am I'm saying, you know, this could happen and here's some fear for you for lunch, right? Not at all. In fact, what I want to do is actually talk about what the CDC has admitted to, what has actually come out, and why. Why this is a big deal and why we need to know about it since 2001. Do you remember the broadcast I did about sort of outing the Gulf War syndrome, the anthrax vaccine? Well, they started giving that in the Gulf War, remember the anthrax vaccine? And then in 2001, the company that delivered, they were the sole deliverer of that vaccine to our armed soldiers, they basically were in risk because Congress was kind of rethinking whether they were going to fund them or not. So right around the time of 9/11, right after 9/11, anthrax all of a sudden showed up from labs here and got sent in envelopes, right? Do you remember that big scare? Okay. The military themselves were never had an anthrax attack. We've been delivering that shot for decades. Without really, I think, much question. And a lot of the soldiers that are coming back, even from Iraq, are questioning, why are we still doing this? And how many problems is it causing? How many biological problems is it causing for the soldiers? But what that did, too, was it spurned the more aggressive nature of how biolabs propped up and in the United States. And it was sort of used as that caveat to do that. So what I want to play for you is Kenneth King. Kenneth King wrote the book Germs Gone Wild, How the Unchecked Development of Domestic Biodefense Threatens America. And he talked about the fact that that biodefense research firsthand right here in America, how many how many facilities, and really what's kind of scary about this moving forward, because this is what he's fearing. Some people fear an EMP. We're really at, I would say, huge risk for these things being able to affect millions and millions and millions and millions of people, right? Something biologically, bioterror, or something like an EMP. So this kind of goes more into the bioterror aspect of this, and this is Kenneth King. Listen up.
People like to push the boundaries sometimes in the area of scientific research. They like to see if it can be done, no matter how scary or reckless or risky it is. I got involved in this subject matter in 2006 when our local congressman tried to bring the country's second biggest biodefense facility to a farm in Pulaski County, Kentucky. He said that it would be as safe as going to Walmart. The local newspaper published stories stating that facilities like this had been operating in the country for over 50 years and had never had an accident. Well, this particular facility is a BSL-4 facility. BSL-4 facilities study diseases for which there is no cure or effective treatment, like smallpox and Ebola. And BSL-4 facilities have tighter containment conditions. The researchers have to wear this sealed spacesuit and have an independent oxygen supply. When I got to researching the history, I discovered that all the claims they were making were absolutely false. There had been numerous problems and incidents, including people, researchers or janitors dying from diseases. Then in 2007, there were a series of accidents around the country at Texas A&M, the CDC, and a foot-and-mouth outbreak in Britain that caused a congressional subcommittee to conduct an investigation, and the Government Accountability Office conducted an investigation and issued a long report. There had been over 1,200 new high-risk germ labs constructed in the U.S. since 2001, that nobody in the government was even keeping track of all the facilities. Accidents were always a risk and were in fact occurring. We have 15,000 people who now have access to these bioweapons agents. 15,000 chances for a mentally unbalanced person to use them in a bad way or for an accident to happen that can affect members of the general public. In 2001, most people are probably aware of the anthrax attacks that killed 5 people, sickened 20-plus people. These attacks were used as a basis for attacking Iraq, supposedly to find weapons of mass destruction that it was claimed Saddam Hussein had. Anyone who's researched that history knows that most of that evidence was fabricated by people in the Bush administration. The FBI had let it be known as early as 2002 that they believed the attacks had come from Fort Detrick, our largest biodefense facility in the U.S. What that should have meant is that we are much more careful about whose hands we put these agents into, and instead, we constructed over 1,200 new high-risk labs around the country.
Okay, I want to stop it right there. Yeah. Okay, so just kind of an update on that. There are more labs than that now. In fact, 1,356 BSL-3 labs and 292 and 600 operational BSL. So altogether, we have 13 operational planned BSL-4 facilities. Then on top of that, we have 1,356 BSL laboratories. Now, think about this just generally for just a moment, because when I was realizing just how many we had, these all come by way of government dollars. And the point is when is it about defense for our country and when is it about perpetrating something? And who are they exactly conjuring up these things and looking at all of these diseases and playing around with some of these diseases? Because I'll get into that, the flu of 1918 and how they recreated that. But think about the fact that what are they doing it for? So So it's either going to be against other people of other countries, or it's going to be against our own citizenry, right? I mean, they're not busy. They're not doing all this for nothing. And so what are they doing it for? Why? And I think just those questions alone should leave people so baffled, angry, mad, upset. Why are we doing this? And has it caused certain things that maybe there have been cover-ups over, deaths, different things that have come our way? What exactly are we looking at here, and why are we doing it? And what's very interesting, too, is USA Today put out an article in 2015. And in 2015, they said there were only 200 biolabs. No, there are many, many more than 200 labs, obviously. Over 1,350 labs. So why are they not outing that? And, you know, I don't expect them to always tell the truth, of course, but isn't that, I mean, pretty far off the mark if you're going to put out a story? So the 1,356, even the BSL-3 labs that are a step down from the BSL-4 were registered with the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention and Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service of the United States Department of Agriculture for select agent research. But who's directing the select agent research and why? And what are they, truly, what are they trying to do? Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. You only have about a minute. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, all people have to look back at is the Tuskegee experiments. That was just to see how a pathogen moves through a population.
Right.
And that was done by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And then the latest one that you don't hear about anymore was the Zika virus that got out of the little testing area that they were trying to mess around with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it mutated itself and all of a sudden, but it got thrown out as like this new thing that just came out of nature.
Exactly.
It was a purposeful built mutation of a virus.
You're exactly
right.
Is
what it was.
Yes. Yep. I
just
agree.
People look into this and you will find the truth.
Yep. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you for the time.
Appreciate it. Yeah. He's exactly right. And they do admit, obviously the CDC admits, of the reconstruction of the 1918 influenza. Why? Ask yourself, why? And then ask yourself, as we come back, because we're going to go to a break, what is it renamed? And did they rename it? Interesting. Be right back on the Kate Daly Show.
There you go.
Today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes. We're seeing things in a different way. God knows it ain't his. It sure ain't no surprise. We're living on the edge.
Welcome back, Kate Daly Show, katedalyradio.com. Glad you're with me. 888-673-1450. 888-673-1450. You can call up. Boy, that song's true, is it not? Aerosmith. Oh, boy. Sketchy guys, but you know, they got that one right. The lyrics on that one. Back in like 1942 and 1969, the United States developed a highly advanced biological weapons program, which was capable of large-scale lethality. And so this is what they even admit to via the Carnegie Endowment. You remember the Carnegie's involvement in our education and how they sought to change history back in, the early 1900s? Anyway, so they said this, and they admit it. Initially, for starters, this program was designed as a deterrent. But American researchers also came to value the flexibility of biological weapons, which could temporarily sicken or disable people rather than kill them. And then during the Cold War, the Soviets also conceived, this is from Carnegie, also conceived of a range of strategic and operational uses for biological weapons. In addition to lethal uses, for example, they explored targeting agriculture and damage in enemies' food stocks, economy, and morale. And Stalin even considered using the organism that causes plague to assassinate Tito, then the president of Yugoslavia. Okay? So it said the materials needed, of course, are relatively cheap, easy to access, and many pathogens, such as the one that causes anthrax, don't need to be developed in a lab that can be found in nature. But they're awfully busy constructing labs and working in these labs, right? And that's coming from them. And so just remember, as they said, they explored targeting agriculture, and because all you have to do is damage the enemy's food stocks, economy, and morale. Now, a lot of you would be saying, well, or could be saying, well, you know, you have to know your enemy and you have to know what they're capable of doing. But it was interesting when we got to the Clinton years, because in the Clinton years, the claim that terrorists armed with biological weapons represented this huge threat back in the 90s to the security of the United States, remember? And how that link was formed, you know, how he came to this. This is what he said. My conclusion today is not if terrorists will use biological warfare, but when and where. Yet it really wasn't, backed up. I mean, the counter-bioterrorism bandwagon was on the notion that at some point, someday, somebody from another country would come and want to do this to us. Now, like I asked before, you know, what's the difference? And you tell me, 888-673, defense of our country or then actively pursuing all of these different things that could be used to harm our own citizenry? That's the problem I have with this, is that which is it? Because if you're going to have these labs and you're going to be conducting these things from a very long time to present, and now we're at over 1,350 labs in the country, even if one lab was doing this, can you imagine 1,350 labs? Now we have a bigger problem, don't we? And so the reconstruction of the 1918 flu, the CDC put out that CDC researchers and their colleagues successfully reconstructed the influenza virus that caused the 1918 to 19 flu pandemic, which killed as many as 50 million people worldwide, right? And so the characterization of the reconstructed 1918 flu was published October 7, 2005. And it was a work, they say, of collaboration among scientists from CDC, Mount Sinai School of Medicine External, and the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, and the Southeast Poultry Research Laboratory External. Okay? So think about all those four organizations together and why. The Southeast Poultry Research Laboratory. And they actually admit this. They're very out with this information. But what's sort of astonishing is the basic question of all. Why? Why? Why reconstruct the 1918 influenza pandemic virus? You know, we hear a lot about how vulnerable we are because we are now getting into the fact that maybe too many antibiotics is making us, you know, resistant and so forth. But I want to continue on with Kenneth King, who wrote the book on germs and warfare and looking at bioterror. This is the rest of the of an interview that he put out. Let me play this for you.
They're doing all kinds of things in biodefense facilities. They're researching the germs in various ways. Unfortunately, in too many cases, they're actually creating scarier versions of the germs to see if it's possible to do so. And then I suppose if they find if it's possible to do so, they're going to try to develop a countermeasure to the thing that they just created. So you have an endless cycle of a dog chasing its tail and plenty of work for biodefense facilities. It was an overreaction to the fear of bioterror. The federal government has put about $70 billion into biodefense since 2001. The average annual funding for biodefense has gone up 4 to 5 times. They are funding the construction of new labs around the country by universities, government agencies, private companies. The problem is the federal government is giving money to build the labs. The money for maintenance and annual operations is going to come from ordinary budgets like universities, even government agencies, and we know there are a few budgetary problems. So these things that might have seemed safe at the time they're being built are going to be maintained at a questionable level of protection. The government's chief regulatory agencies, the CDC and NIH, the ones who are supposed to regulate these dangerous labs, operate dangerous labs themselves, and so they have a vested interest in making it appear to the public that this is all safe and no problems with it. There have been various efforts to create antibiotic-resistant versions of existing bioweapons agents, things like anthrax, tularemia, Q fever, brucella. These are all things that if you're diagnosed early enough, you can get some antibiotics and you'll probably be okay. But if they create antibiotic-resistant versions of the germs, that's a whole different question. I think if there were an accidentally infected researcher, they might actually try to cover it up for a while, and making it much less likely that we'd be able to respond quickly. So that's another whole aspect of this. The 1918 flu killed 50 million to 100 million people worldwide. The CDC and others brought the 1918 flu back to life. It was dead. It was not out there in the general public. And they recreated it from DNA from a corpse. And they have been constructing experiments with the 1918 flu around the country, including crossing it with other flus. And I just think that's a really scary and stupid thing to be doing. We presumably have some immunity to it because some of our flus are descended from it. They've said that it can be treated with Tamiflu and things like that. But just bringing it back to life, something so scary, and creating the possibility, not only creating the possibility, but deliberately trying to cross it with other forms of flu to see what might happen, it may be interesting to scientists, but it's really scary and reckless for the rest of us.
Whoa. That was Kenneth King, Germs Gone Wild, How the Unchecked Development of Domestic Biodefense Threatens America. Really shocking expose of the reckless bioweapon research that's going on right here in America all the time. And why are they doing it? And he really does. He brings up some great information. So the 1918, from what documents are pointing to, is that's what they renamed as the H5N1. So a type of influenza virus that, so if you look up the definition of that, this is all they say about it, is a type of influenza virus that causes a highly infectious severe respiratory disease in birds called avian influenza. And human cases of H5N1 avian flu, of avian influenza, occur occasionally, but it's difficult to transmit from person to person. Did the monkeying around of that become H5N1? There's a lot of people documenting that, and it's interesting that you won't find that when you just look up H5N1. But you have to also ask yourself why. On that too. Why bring it back? Why rename it? Why be dishonest about it? And I'm really concerned that they actually think that this is this is something that they even should be doing. And with no clear reasoning as to who they're going to be affecting with the things that they're doing. They're working with Ebola, they're working with all of these things, and it makes one wonder, right? How much of this will come about in future, well, I'm not the only one saying this, of future things that are delivered to us, not discovered. Isn't there a difference of manipulation between something created and delivered secretly to something that just springs up? Remember how on the show we've talked so many times about things don't just spring up. Polio just didn't surge for no reason. Nobody ever asks, why did it surge? We don't go back in the Wayback Machine to ask why these things happened. We just take for granted that they just automatically sprung up, and we just don't know why. So the Telegraph actually put out an article about this a year ago, and it talked about biological weapons easy to develop due to rapid advances in technology, and the scientists were warning the Pentagon. also remember how we always say, and people and guests on the show have always said, these are well-laid plans. They're also laid plans that are out in the open, too. This isn't something that, and when I say plans, I mean it takes a lot of people behind the scenes secretively working on this, because otherwise it would surprise the hell out of people. It would shock them to think that that lab down the road is dealing with the creation of biological warfare in some of its worst, absolute worst ways. This article actually was pointing out by Ben Farmer the prospects of creating viruses from scratch and tweaking bacteria so they become even more dangerous, and tinkering with microbes so they manufacture, not discover, manufacture toxins and poisons are the most concerning possibilities. And he said the U.S. government has to pay close attention to this field, just as it did to advances in chemistry and physics during the Cold War, the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. And he said the warning, there was a warning that came about, commissioned by the Pentagon, into how to weigh up security concerns for the field of synthetic biology, is really what we're talking about. Synthetic biology expands what is possible in creating new weapons. You know, who are they creating the weapons for? The Center of Disease Control categorized these things as Category A agents posing a risk to national security. Rabbit fever, anthrax, smallpox, botulin toxin, bubonic plague, viral hemorrhagic fevers such as Ebola, right? And then you have to ask yourself, did the tinkering of these diseases in our labs, is that the only reason we're even talking about them right now? And if they want to go down and tinker with something with people, maybe into an area of our country that is kind of, you know, steeped in trash and filth, L.A., San Francisco, I don't know, name one, and something sort of springs up and then becomes contagious or in some way spreads. Are they doing that? It's a lot of people talking about the manufacturing of many, many dangerous, dangerous things that they're inventing. Who are they inventing it for? Be right back. Last time I checked, we weren't under attack, and nor have we ever been on a biological weapon. Be right back.
All right, Tango team. Quinn and I have been working on some new jingles for our four Southern Utah locations.
And here's what...
Welcome back, Kate Daly Show. There's so much on this subject. We really could do at least several hours on it, at least. A lot of information. People have been studying this for quite a while, especially since the larger boom from 2001 on. And so just to kind of, you know, bring that to your attention a little bit. So the national, well, let's just go back to this. The university, the government, the hospital, the corporate laboratories, all engaged in research for germ warfare, right? They will not disclose their operations to the public as required by federal rules. So first we should be asking why is that, and how are they getting away with this, right? We're always asking that. How did they get away with this? But instead of shutting operations down, the National Institute of Health, NIH, based in Maryland, of course, the government agency tasked with oversight, right, of the laboratories, allowed them to continue to operate. And it was kind of a weird stance for the entity that says, you know, they're the steward of medical and behavioral research for the nation. Yeah, you know, government watching government. That's usually how that works. And it works out well for us, the citizen, right? So from California to New Jersey, Boston, San Antonio, in the heart of the major centers of population, these labs were financed for their share of about $20 billion since 2001 and are literally crawling with deadly germs. From not only the recreation of things that they're doing, that end up being renamed. How do you like it to be renamed? Why don't they just call it what it is if they're going to regurgitate the Spanish flu from 1918? But dealing with anthrax, dealing with all these things. In the laboratories, the security is not as it should be. A lot of people are, watchdog groups are saying it's lax. Safety procedures aren't there. And under U.S. law, the recipients of federal funds for biotech research have to comply with the guidelines issued by NIH. But NIH is saying, it's okay, we've got this. Do you feel better? So a lot of operations are being kept secret. There was a watchdog group out of Texas, and they were kind of attempting to make sure to tell the public all about all of this. In 1972, Biological Weapons Convention, BWC, which the U.S. signed, prohibited research on offensive biological weapons. So all they have to do is say, we are doing this, we're building these things in defense of our country, right? Not because we want to tinker around and design these things, no, but just because of that, they can keep it secret, right? National security, quote unquote. And so they said if the work is performed in secret, weapons designed for offensive use could be concealed. And in the 30s, the Japanese military masked its secret germ warfare scheme as a water purification project. So I think it's really important to note how these things are couched. The government-funded labs engage in what's called dual-use research, so pathogen research having offensive and defensive applications. And one of the watchdog group's reports came out and said has encountered grave problems with the system, risky experiments approved with dubious safety precautions. And so they sort of let something out of the bag and then whoops, and then nobody ever gets in trouble for it. And it's really convenient. Like the thing with the anthrax, it was very, very convenient and almost very, I think, very telling that the company that was about to lose their entire reason for being, the company that originated from Saudi Arabia over here, that actually were the ones that delivered the anthrax vaccine, right, produced it and delivered it. They're the ones that were just about to lose funding when anthrax showed up as an attack. And then, oh, boom, all of a sudden Congress re-upped everything for them and have not really questioned it since. And they're doing quite well as the only provider, right, dealing with anthrax. It just is just very coincidental, the timing, a little too coincidental for me. And so we have these things. We also have what's called Disease X, which is another interesting part of this puzzle, because when they come out and they start saying, oh, geez, this could be an issue. This could be a problem. Oh, hey, we've got this thing and it could be really bad. They started about a year ago, really, taking to task major organizations, not taking to task, using major organizations like CNN to push this. And it was they're calling it the unknown disease X. And they keep saying it could be an epidemic. Can we find out before it's too late? In Berlin earlier this year, or earlier last year, the World Health Organization listed Disease X among the diseases most in need of research and development. Do you think it's already been created? Do you think it's already there? I'm going to go with yes on that one. Disease X is not a specific illness, they say, rather a hypothetical epidemic that could be caused by a pathogen, a contagious strain or a virus that we don't yet realize affects humans. So they were at the World Health Summit in Berlin last year, and they were basically saying, oh, it's likely it's an animal source, but we just really don't know. And they said, you know, we have all these other emerging epidemics that sometimes spring up in countries where we have a lot of, oh, you know, government-funded agencies. What do they call those? Oh, yes, NGOs. They've been accused of doing things via vaccine. Now, Japan used it via water purification project, but this would be, you know, via vaccine. This is why I talk a lot about vaccines and different things that we're taking into our body without understanding what we're doing, what's in them. Because what a great way, if you can get people to obey a new federal law where they have to take into their body something that is created in a laboratory via our government, they could put anything in there. So they're basically coming out and saying, gee, this could be a thing. You might want to get ready for this, although we don't even name it yet. That's how insane this thing is. We can't even give it a name. That's I don't know about you, but I just went, ooh, ouch. This is bad. In fact, and all it would take is, you know, to wipe out a city. Wouldn't that get people clamoring for whatever solution the government wanted to deliver? Without the risk of sounding conspiratorial, but just looking ahead and identifying what we're doing in secret, why we're doing it in secret, and how much of it we're doing in secret, they don't do anything for no reason. They don't do anything just to study it. I'm sorry, but that could have been one lab in the United States just to study something. Or, this country over here would like to deliver something to us. We'll do some research, not create or not bring out of the dead, out of a corpse, the 1918 flu epidemic again. And then when they use the excuse, we just need to study this. You know, we just had 100 years, basically. Well, when was H5N1, 2005, 2007, and then again, kind of little resurgences, right? We've had all those years where we didn't really have to worry about the effects of the 1918 flu, right? Influenza. So if we went that long without having to deal with that, why then recreate it for research? Why? What would be the point of that? So that just, that's never sat right with me. It just doesn't make sense. So there's an awful lot of people sounding the bell right now because they think that a new epidemic might be on the horizon, but one that is more manipulated and delivered rather than just spontaneously happening in another country somewhere. It has been real convenient, I think, to say that, oh, this just sprung up from somewhere else, and now we're vulnerable. Citizen, do what we want you to do. We're the government. We're here to help, right? That worries me. And it worries me also that even in the articles talking about disease X, you don't really get a clear outline of what it is. That's another sort of worrisome thing to me. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Go right ahead.
Hey, thanks. I couldn't help but notice the similarities between what you're talking and there's a fictional book called The Venetian Betrayal that actually goes over this about It was a Russian agent that created a virus and working with the viruses, and it went into a lot of the whys and the hows and what do you do. Mm-hmm. Completely fictional thing. It's like a Jack Reacher book type thing. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because in that it goes through what you're talking about. So people that have a harder time, such as myself, looking at the hard data and things like this, they can get the conceptual idea from this kind of suspense book.
Yeah.
If they wanted to look at this, and it will explain exactly what you're talking about. It's real kind of interesting. I just happened to finish the book a couple weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, thank
Great
you for
time.
Going over this.
Yeah.
Because it is something that needs to be said. It's something that we don't want to think about.
I know.
But it's something that we should.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Great call. Appreciate you. Isn't that coincidental, that book? So The Venetian Betrayal, I think, is what he said. Correct me if I'm wrong, caller, but The Venetian Betrayal. There have been a lot of reporters, I think, that have been trying to out some information. We still, because of the secrecy that the NIH provides for the laboratories, and you have to ask yourself why they're providing that kind of secrecy. Not everything, I'm sorry, can be excused away as national security. Anytime they don't want to disclose something, it's national security. You getting a little tired of that? I am. What's all the national security about? Last time I checked, we don't have, I know people can say, well, it's coming. Another country will be mad at us enough to do something major like this. And yeah, I'm well aware of that. They could. But I think that we have jumped the shark, forgive the Fonzie reference, that we have jumped the shark in creating and manipulating these things. And who are we using them against? You know, they want to make us look like we're the almost victim. No. If we have over 1,350 labs working around the clock on creating these things, the secrecy that they are given by the government to do this, then I think we should worry as citizens on not only who we're doing it to as the perpetrator, because for some reason in foreign policy, we always like to think we're always the good guy. There's a reason that they're doing this at the volume of over 1,350 labs here in America. And you might live near one of them. I don't know. But this is cause for concern. And it's cause for concern because, yes, we could be affected by something. And, yes, it's really, I think, a good time to question who would be doing it to whom. That's really what this hour is about, right? It's about who's doing it to whom. Do I think something like this could happen? Yes, absolutely. Do I think an EMP can happen? Yes. Are there only five makers of the electrical grid systems? And none of them are located in America if we had an EMP. That's why it's so difficult to actually put ourselves back up and working again, because we don't even have those here in the United States, people that make those. Yes. I think either one of those things are a huge looming threat without sounding the big giant fear alarm just for fear's sake. But so many people have been ringing the alarm bell on this that unless the citizenry gets very upset and starts taking this to task, they're not going to do anything about it. And they're going to keep growing the laboratories. There were 1,200 laboratories when Kenneth King did that video. Now there are, a matter of a few years later, over 1,300, over 1,360, actually, if you want to include all types. That's a whole lot of laboratories, guys. I think about all those employees. Think about what they're working on. And I just named a few. We just had bubonic plague, right? We've been talking about that. Oh, it sprang up in Africa. Oh, it just sprang up in L.A. There's a case or maybe could be a case, I think, is what they were saying. Is that a preemptive? Is that a preemptive cause for alarm that we are going to get it? Because usually there's some sort of preface of, oh, looks like this thing could be on the horizon. And then, bam, about a year later we see or a couple of years later in the future, we start to see these things happen. And we start to see cases. And so, yeah, I think I definitely think if they're out there saying that right now, because what can it be blamed on? It can be blamed on sanitation, can be blamed on a bunch of things for spreading it, right? So would that be an opportune place to start something based on the condition of L.A.? I was just there. It's really gross. L.A., San Francisco, these different places. That's what I worry about, to tell you the truth, is that this is being very, very manipulated. And then that's the big oops moment. There isn't a lot of security on these things. And those cases are usually buried. And we've covered a couple of them on the show. I don't know if you remember the guys driving through the West that were caught with certain things in their van, things that came out of a lab that should have never been driven just by a regular van. And those things don't actually hit mainstream a lot, and that's cause for worry too. So just in bringing this up, I just wanted to share this. It's worrisome, and I'll probably do more on this subject because there was a lot more I didn't even get to. But even USA Today came out with an article requesting information on the Freedom of Information Act, seeking copies of lab incident reports for the previous 2 years. What's getting out and why? What accidents have happened and why? There have been some major accidents over the last decade. And this is just something we need to keep fresh and talking about, truly. Be right back with Colonel Doug McGregor in just a moment.